So welcome to yet another day of this retreat. It goes so fast, and sometimes people are wondering how many days are there to go. And then the next thing you wake up in the morning and it's all gone. And you're back at work. You're back through the traffic of Jakarta. You're back worrying about your boss in Hong Kong. So really enjoy every moment, because sometimes that the days and nights pass very fast. And then when we are enjoying our life, sometimes that we fail to really take those opportunities and appreciate them. And of course, once they're gone forever. So it's nice to be able to enjoy every moment of this retreat as much as you can. It's almost like to savor it, just like when you are eating, when you have your breakfast. Do you know how to, or lunch, do you know how to do lunch meditation? You've had enough practice, I think you should know by now. Because with lunch meditation or eating meditation, sometimes people hardly even taste their food. In shops, you're busy talking to somebody. So you're talking to them as you are eating, which means that much of your brain is occupied with a conversation, so you can't really appreciate the taste of the food. So to really appreciate the taste of the food, and if you appreciate the taste of the food, it also means that, you know, that you start to secrete saliva and bile and all this other stuff, which is necessary to digest the food. And then just even now, even though you just had breakfast, do you know what you're having for lunch? Have you smelt it already? What is your favorite food? Think of your favorite food right now, as if it's right in front of you, and you can see it steaming in front of you, and the smell, the aroma, just in your favorite cafe in Hong Kong. Can you actually smell it now? Can you actually? Because when you do, you start salivating. If you pay attention to your food, its smell, its taste, even its presentation, it means the juices in your tummy get secreted. So it gets well digested. But if you're busy talking or busy doing something else, you find you're not paying attention, not mindful, which means that things don't get secreted, which means that you get bad digestion. So even here, it's wonderful when you have breakfast or lunch to learn how to eat mindfully, appreciatively, so that every morsel of food you can really taste to the max and enjoy it and take it slowly. There's no rush here. You don't need to finish your lunch because you might be late for your nap. It doesn't work that way. So if you take your time and you do relax, that you have more time to appreciate the taste of the food. And it is a pleasant practice of like slowing down one mouthful at a time. Because the opposite of mindful eating is that just when we plop through in our mouth, we don't know really what's going on, we're watching the TV or we're talking to people, and you can be putting all sorts of rubbish in your mouth. And I tell young people, if you're going out for the evening with your partner, if you go to an expensive restaurant, you pay so much money for that food, you must tell your partner, I'm paying a lot of money for this food. I want to really enjoy it, so shut up. And only after we finish can you start talking so you can appreciate it. If you want to have a conversation, then go to a fast food restaurant or something. It doesn't matter what you put in your mouth. But if you really want to appreciate it, just spend time lingering over the taste. And also, Have you ever noticed that when people are eating, they're usually two or three spoonfuls, or if it's using chopsticks, ahead of themselves? You got one in your mouth, you got one morsel on your chopsticks waiting for the next opportunity to get in your mouth, and you're already just, you know, looking and a heap over here, that's number two, that's number three over there. And you're too far ahead of yourself. So it's actually a very interesting practice, one morsel at a time. So if it's with chopsticks or a spoon, you pick up the spoon and you put it in your mouth, and then you wait. Take all the time you need, and then once you've swallowed it, then you decide what you're going to have next. Don't be too far ahead of yourself, which means your mindfulness stays right here. It is a practice which we do at a retreat, whether it's mindful eating, or even when you have the shower in the morning or the afternoon. I hope you have a shower, at least sometimes. I know it's cold, but it's nice warm water. And so even when you are in the shower, just feel, just know the warm water on your skin. Become alive, you know, to those sensations. When you're rubbing your body to dry, you can feel just the towel on your skin. What happens is everything becomes like alive. You become here in this moment. And because you're slowing down, you're not in such a rush, it means that you're actually appreciating this moment much, much more. You're more alive, better digestion, better appreciation of food, and also just, you know, better showering or brushing of teeth. Whatever it is, it seems to be such a simple thing, but it does make a difference. And then that means that when you, at night time, when you go to bed, you can relax and go to sleep. Anyone who doesn't sleep properly, if you have difficulty sleeping at night, please follow this advice. Because sitting up here in the mornings, sometimes in the evenings, sometimes you see many people meditating here and falling asleep. And then when you go to bed at night, you can't fall asleep. The solution is pretty obvious. When you come up here in the morning, please try to fall asleep. And you'll be wide awake until breakfast. And at night time, when you want to take a nap, go into your bed and try to meditate. And you'll be fast asleep. Now, why is that? You notice here that because you're trying to do something, you're trying to fall asleep, you can't. When you try to meditate, you fail. It's the trying is the problem here. How can you fall asleep, you know, when your things are so tense, you're trying so hard to do something? So we learn how to be in this moment and literally just how to relax, how to be here. And you're sitting or lying in your bed and just relaxing. Relaxing means having no goals, nothing to achieve, nowhere to go. If you fall asleep, fine. If you don't fall asleep, fine. Because there was a few years ago, I had some trouble falling. I don't know why, what was going on in my body, but I solved my problem by just, I was laying in my bed in my cave and couldn't go to sleep. And I thought, hey, why do I want to go to sleep? I'm really comfortable here. You know, in your whatever bed you're in, it's your bed, it's your pillow, and it's quiet, and I'm relaxed. I don't have to give a talk. My cave is so well built that no one can sneak in there to take a photograph of me. They can't ask me to sign a book. So I'm there, just peaceful, stretched out. Oh, this is so good. Who wants to waste this opportunity by falling asleep? I don't want to fall asleep. I'm just going to be here and just enjoy, just stretched out in a warm blanket, nice pillow, and this is great. And of course, the next thing I knew, I woke up in the morning. Because I was trying to fall asleep, it was pushing me. That causes tightness and tension, which means you can't fall asleep. You relax, you just want to be here enjoying this moment, and then if your body needs to sleep, it falls asleep. So what we're doing here is, in this particular talk, I'm introducing just how we make progress in life, in our health, in our mind, in our emotional stability, and obviously in deep meditation, just we make this progress through using insight, not force. Imagine, you ask me to say, oh, can you help me go to sleep at night? Okay, I can do that. And I come to your bed and I grab you by the throat, go to sleep or else. Okay, I'm warning you. Of course, people get so uptight. Of course they won't go to sleep. And sometimes that's what you do to yourself, trying to force yourself. Well, if I don't go to sleep, what will happen? All of that fear and tension and tightness, that's what stops you going to sleep. So you understand what's the problem. You get insight and understanding when you see what's really going on. And that's the same, not just with your sleep, but with other things which can disturb you during a retreat. All the things which disturb you during a retreat are actually wonderful opportunities to learn and to grow. All great opportunities for understanding. Just like, you know, the old saying of Ajahn Chah, that the local villagers were having a party. And this was over in Thailand many years ago, over 40 years ago. And when they had a party, it usually went on for 2 or 3 days. They didn't have many parties, but when they did it, they really, really got into it. Which was usual, which was okay, except that they just discovered generators and amplifiers and loudspeakers. And this is indigenous Adis villages, and so they never had this before. And so as soon as they got speakers and amplifiers and generators to make the electricity, of course, they made it so loud. And they went on partying till about 2 o'clock in the morning. At about 2 o'clock, they got tired and they went to bed. And at 3 o'clock, the monks got up. They only had 1 hour sleep. And that was okay for just one night. Went on again, 2 nights. And so we asked Ajahn Chah, because they wouldn't listen to us. You know, they weren't afraid of the Western monks yet. But Ajahn Chah, they were scared of him. So we asked Ajahn Chah, we went there to see him. Ajahn Chah, look, you know, people have to have their fun and their joy in life. You know, the villagers, they're not monks. We don't mind them having a party, but can you ask them to stop by 1 o'clock? So get a couple of hours rest, please? And this is what Ajahn Chah, it is just so wise, but, you know, just, it's not the wisdom you want. What he said to us, it doesn't matter, it's not the sound disturbs you. It's you who disturb the sound. And, you know, that was turning it the other way around. I thought, oh my goodness, he's right again. And of course, you use that again and again and again and again in your life. For example, you know that you are just about to get into jhanas and somebody bangs the door. Or you're just about to fall asleep in your cottage after a long day of meditating. And someone at that time decides to boil a kettle of water and then to make their tea. And they go, as they stir it around. And you think, oh, can't they have a little bit of sensitivity? I've just, you know, been meditating, they just sleep, but it's not fair. And you notice, this is how Ajahn Chah told me, you notice that all the noise of the person in your cottage stopped about 5 or 10 minutes ago. But the noise inside your head between your ears is still going on. It goes on all night. It goes on in the morning. And you think, I'm going to blacklist that person. I'm going to go and speak to Burr. I'm going to get their name struck off the list. Never again. And they stopped making a noise 12 hours ago. But you are still making a noise inside your head. So which is the loudest noise? And you see from that what he meant. Disturbing the noise. Noise happens. You try and be quiet. You try and keep, silence, in these areas. But we're not going to have the voice police coming up and giving you warnings. There was the story of the man. He'd been married for about, I think it was his 60th wedding anniversary. It's a long time, 60 years married. And he was interviewed, and he said, what's the secret of your long marriage? And he said, because my wife and I don't argue. So don't argue, yes. I only argued once with my wife. That was on our honeymoon, and ever since I haven't argued with her at all. No arguments. So how could that be? And so he told the story that they went on their honeymoon in the Grand Canyon. And as they were walking down the track into the Grand Canyon on his little donkeys, his wife's donkey just stumbled a little bit. The wife never fell off, but it was just a bit disturbing. And so his wife, he told me, he said his wife just looked at that donkey straight in the eye and said, "Donkey, that's the first time." I didn't know what she was doing. But then the donkey stumbled again, and my wife lifted up her finger and said, "Donkey, that's the second time." And I didn't know what she meant. And when the donkey, a few seconds later, stumbled another time, a third time, this time my wife never said anything. She just took out a gun and shot the donkey dead. And when I asked my wife, "What did you do that for?" She looked at me and said, "Husband, that's the first time." We haven't argued since. So, I thought of it. Now I've told that story. If I see any of you on your mobile phones, short chatting away, I'm going to look at you and say, "That's the first time." No messing around. But of course, we don't do stuff like that. I go to jail for that. But you can see that just people make noises. That's the nature of people. You try and limit it out of kindness. But if somebody does make a noise, make sure it does an echo inside of you. In other words, the noise stops and you stop thinking about it. Be kind, because the greatest noise is the noise between our ears. And that's something that you have all the power in the world to actually to lessen, to keep the noble silence inside. Outside is just noisy. So as you develop that inner noble silence, you find, yes, the world makes noises. Beautiful little birds chirping in the morning. The sound of the people just making up the soups or the stews. All the sounds in the world, but we don't fight them. We don't allow the noises to disturb us, and we don't disturb the noises. We live at peace with them. And you find when you live at peace with them, you don't fight the noises. It's amazing how noises which would usually be quite disturbing tend to just fade away when you don't give them importance. So that was one of the monks over in Bodhidharma Monastery when his brother came to visit. And as usual, over in Bodhidharma Monastery, it's just so full, monks all over the place. And because, it's a popular place and there's lots of people ordaining and so that we don't have space. So, but anyway, this monk said his brother was coming to visit from Europe. Can he come and stay? When I say there's no room. He said, it doesn't matter, we grew up together, he can share my hut. It's only small huts, over 3 meters by 2.4. And he said, well, you can probably fit in there. And he said, well, I grew up with him, so, it's obviously we know each other. But he said, you're probably going to be snoring. At least one of you is. And so, can you stand that? And he said, yeah, I've got it all planned. My plan is that I'm going to go to bed first, and I'm going to start sleeping first. Because whoever starts sleeping first is safe. And the other one, they're the one who has to stay up all night. Just like that person who went to Melbourne. And in Melbourne, it was the time of the Australian Open. So every hotel room was taken. Everyone was full. And so he's looking for a place to stay at night, and small motels, hotels, big ones, small ones, they were all full. And he went to one sort of cheap hotel, and he said, well, it's a place, it's a spare bed, but it's a twin share. But the guy in that room, he doesn't mind sharing with people. Only trouble is that no one's managed to stay the night in that place because he snores like an elephant. And this visitor said, oh, I'll take it, no problem. So he went in the room, the twin share. And in the morning, when he came up, the person on the desk said, how did you? Oh, I had a lovely sleep. No problem at all. He said, wow, you're amazing. That's the first person who's ever managed to get a good night's sleep. In the same room with that guy. He snored, so he didn't snore at all. Well, how come? What happened? Well, just when I got into bed and had my pajamas on, I just went over to him, kissed him on the cheek, and then he stayed awake all night. And I had a good night's sleep. Don't try that in this retreat centre. You'd get in big trouble. But it's amazing. Just how you can use some insight, as long as it's within the law, you don't get into trouble, get me in trouble. But it's this particular monk, it did work for him, because, his brother went to sleep first. There's a small room, and his brother was never realised how loud his brother snored, really, really loud. And he's not going to sleep tonight, he thought. But that's when he started using insight. Just instead of just complaining, that doesn't help. Let's actually remember all these incredible teachings. Such as, it's not the noise disturbs you, you disturb the noise. What does that mean? So what he did was to start listening to his brother snoring with kindness. And he started, when he changes from I don't want to hear this, but oh, this is interesting. Then he started listening deeply to his brother snoring, and he found it actually had a rhythm to it. And it was like it had a bass to it. it had all sorts of different keys being played at the same time. It was not like, the orchestras, you'll find in the symphony halls of Hong Kong or Jakarta. This was actually something which was experimental, breaking boundaries. Just new types of music. And it was fascinating just how the whole music, just was without any form at all. It was completely challenging the stereotypes of music. And it was so fascinating and interesting that he woke up in the morning having a wonderful night's sleep. As soon as he didn't give it negativity, I don't like this, it has to stop. As soon as he started seeing it in another way, it became beautiful. And he wasn't a problem anymore. And he fell fast asleep. I don't know if sometimes the other sounds which really upset us when people criticize us and tell us off. And if they criticize you and tell us off, I remember from my school days in Greek philosophy, there was this philosopher. And, you know, he was not one of the famous ones. I forget what his name was now. But anyway, that whenever, you know, he was in Athens or wherever he was living and doing his business, whenever people criticized him and told him off, he would actually laugh. And, you are really stupid today. You just tripped over. You just tread in some dog poo. And he'd always laugh instead of getting upset. And so they asked him, well, why? And he said, oh, it's my teacher taught me this. What did your teacher say? Well, he said, when I was studying with my teacher, if I did something wrong and my teacher shouted at me or scolded me or said that was a mistake, my teacher would charge me a few extra drachmas for that. Because, you know, scolding someone, that takes a lot of energy and effort. You know, that's extra to all the other training. So imagine that was you, you know, at work. And every time you made a mistake and the boss scolded you, you know, he'd charge you for that. Now, extra work, overtime, for scolding you and setting you off. I should do that. Every time I tell you off, or scold you, or say you shouldn't do that, you should put a few extra dollars in the young pal. It's extra work scolding people. So he said, every time I made a mistake and got scolded, I had to pay some money for it. He said, now, when my boss in Athens scolds me, or when people scold me, or when my wife scolds me, I get it for free. I don't have to pay. That's why I think it's so funny. That's called positive attitude. In other words, look at it in a different way. And when you look at it a different way, it's not the noise disturbs you. It's not you who disturbs the noise. You don't spoil one another at all. You don't disturb one another. You live in this wonderful sense of peace and harmony together. It's amazing. If you can do that, people scold you, they tell you off. I already mentioned to a few people what Ajahn Chah would always say if somebody scolds you, if they demean you, if they call you bad names. And in Thailand, the worst name was calling someone a dog. And what I tell you is the other day, Anji. Yeah, Anjing, yeah. Remember what you have to do if someone calls you an Anjing? If you got a tail, yeah. Or if you think you are a dog, you should bow. Bow, wow, bow, wow, bow. No, in other words, what it means is that you use your wisdom to not get upset. Receiving bad words from other people is beyond your control. It's beyond your choice. You will get blame. You will get praise. You can't control that at all. Or what insight tells you, you can change. You've got control, you've got choice over the way you respond. That way you've got full choice. Which is one of the reasons why, in a place like this, there's no way we can get you appreciated to the extent you deserve. There's no way that people will understand just how tough it is and how hard you work. There's no way that people will understand, you'll be able to convey the difficulties of life. You can't change other people, but my goodness, you can choose how you react. And that is what insight does. That's what Ajahn Chah always meant. It's not the noise disturbs you. You disturb the noise. You choose how you react. So those types of insights gives you the key in just how to, even when you are sitting meditation and it hurts or it's cold or it's hot. I don't know that, you know, you've got the aircon on the back there, and sometimes, and even though it says don't touch it, but sometimes you haven't been tempted to say, no, it's too cold, I'm going to turn it up today. Even the gong. The one of the reasons why, you know, this gong over here is not the usual gong which goes ding, ding. Because when I was a monk with Ajahn Chah, I don't know why, but sometimes I'm sure that the meditation went on longer than it should. He was just torturing me. He knew I was suffering. And he didn't ring the bell. And other times, I was getting very peaceful, about to become enlightened. And then Ajahn Chah would get the gong bong and go, bang! So, and I had no control over the gong. So I decided, I started thinking. I had a good education, I was smart. How can I get around this problem of Ajahn Chah being in control of the gong? Slingshots. Remember those little slingshots? You know, a bit of rubber and you put it back. So I practiced. My plan was that, you know, that I would keep a little slingshot with a couple of pieces of wood or something in there. And then when I thought it was time that the meeting should finish, because everyone's meditating with their eyes closed, I get out my... and it'll go, bong! And I'll be, ah, oh, the meditation will bow before I do that. I thought of that. I trained, but I didn't have the nerve to go through with it. But you know, that's missing out. It's not the idea of controlling the gong. It's just being this moment. It doesn't matter. You know, soon the bell will go. It doesn't go. It doesn't matter. Just sitting here enjoying yourself. So those insights, it was understanding how you react to stuff. This is where the insight comes up. This is where you do have a choice. I had no control over Ajahn Chah, but I did have a control over how I reacted to sitting long periods of time. Even having aches and pains in the body. Even just being tired or being depressed or being full of energy. This is where you do have a choice. And this is one of the places where I mentioned the other day, when you make mistakes, when things don't go according to your plans, you know, it doesn't matter. You can, you know, it's, you know, it won't last. You sit there enjoying your meditation, or just whatever's in front of you is the most important thing in the whole world. And you do things like, you know, the time when I mentioned that when your leg went to sleep, and you're thinking, what's going to happen? You just no, sit there, let's see what happens. It's not unpleasant. When you miss your lunch, I'm not going to eat today. You don't die by missing a meal. You may think you will, but you don't. Even not sleepy if you don't sleep at night because you've got full energy. It doesn't matter. You can catch on the sleep later on. So a lot of times that, you know, we worry about things which just make real no sense to us. We don't need to worry about things. Which means that we can live a much more peaceful life when we choose to. And of course, when we are meditating, and if it does hurt, then of course, try both ways. First of all, just wait for a while. See if the ache or the pain or the itch goes away. A lot of time it does. And other times it just gets worse. So what I usually do, I got an ache in my knee, say, I just, okay, knee, you're aching, that's par for the course, and go, just carry on meditating. But if the pain comes up again, I ignore it a second time. We usually do things in threes in Buddhism. Bow three times, three refuges. All that. So anyway, we go around the stupa three times. It's always threes. And so when I do this, third time I ignore it. But after third time, if it hurts again, then I move. I choose to move. So I don't go too far, you know, into endurance. The reason I don't go too far into endurance is because I've seen too many of my friends decide to become the tough guys, the Bruce Willises of meditation. Not die hard, meditate hard. And unfortunately, it just goes to such extremes, and people do this. There was extreme monks. There was first monk, which I heard that he was staying over in England, and he read in the suttas that the Buddha was so frugal that he'd only have 3 robes, even in the night time in the snow. So he decided to go out onto Hampstead Heath in the winter time, just with 3 robes, and meditate there all night. And in the morning, after meditating in the snow for all night, the ambulance took him to the hospital, where he stayed with pneumonia for a couple of weeks. It's crazy. There was another monk. These other monks are still around. This other monk, he decided to meditate all night without moving. So, just getting in his posture, he's not going to move no matter what. You know, just like it said in those suttas, even though your blood dries up and your bones turn to dust, doesn't matter, I'm not going to move. And he did that all night, 12 hours. And we had to take him to hospital too. Double knee reconstruction. And it's sometimes that people think you can get enlightened, you can get meditation by pushing. You don't do that. If you want to do that, go and just join the US Marines or something. Just go and be Iron Man or Rust Man or I don't know. But that's how you go into extremes. We don't do that. We use our wisdom power, not our willpower. So we understand, what is this? There's one of the stories I often tell the monks. There was the toughest of all monks over in Thailand was a monk called Ajahn Mahabua. He was tough. He was a monk who once, he had a heart attack at night time. And, you know, big one. And in the morning, you know, he said he was sick. His doctor came up, and there was a Chinese doctor. And is it 6 pulses or 7 pulses or something? 9 pulses? They feel the different pulses. How many is it? 6 or 7 or whatever? But anyway, all of his were not working. Basically, he said, you're supposed to be dead. It's impossible. You know, what I feel here is you're not alive. But of course he was talking to him. He had such incredible strength of mind that, you know, it doesn't matter, heart attack, he was still going to stay. Very tough monk. But he also told me once that when he was a monk with his teacher, Ajahn Mun, that he had this fever. It was another bout of malaria fever. Most monks had malaria in those days. And when he had his malaria fever, the bell went for the chores. Now, the afternoon time when all the monks do sweeping or do the chores. And this monk decided in the middle of a malaria fever, he was going to be stronger than the fever. So he got up, dressed, and sweating, you know, staggering, went down the stairs of his hut, picked up a broom and started sweeping. Now, in the middle of being so sick, that's how tough he was. And at that, Ajahn Mun saw him, and he scolded him, scolded and scolded him, and said, "You're not a monk." The job of a monk is not to fight, is to investigate and understand. Go back up to your room, lay down and understand. Don't fight. And I always remember that coming from a place which was most unexpected, that one of the toughest monks in Thailand he was saying he made a mistake. And he was told off for it. You don't fight the defilements. You don't fight your hindrances. You understand them. You learn about them. That's where you have the choice to get to know tiredness. Why are you tired? Sometimes it is because you're exhausted. Sometimes it's the weather. Sometimes it can be some stuff going through your body. You know, even myself, that there are times when I've had a very good night's sleep, and then get up in the morning, and you know, you just do your jobs, and then you feel, no, I feel really tired right now. But you've just had a good sleep. But no, I feel. And you know that so often now, if I feel tired, you know what is indulgence and what is real tiredness. I just go and lay down. And if it's true, you go out straight away. And then an hour later you wake up and you feel so good. My body is telling me, Ajahn Brahm, Ajahn Brahm, you're getting sick. Take a break. No, I can't. I'm a tough mug. Ajahn Brahm, take a break. And now I'm smart enough, sensitive enough to listen to my body. This is not indulgence or laziness, because that keeps me very healthy. And sometimes I don't know what it is. There's something inside of you that's telling you, please take a break. Your body often tells you, but sometimes we don't listen. Yeah, there's this obvious thing, but when I, young man, I decided I was a Buddhist, so I decided I should go on pilgrimage to India. This was 1970, I think. Yeah, about that time, 71, 72. And so, overland, really just a long way, you know, for me, from London, over, you know, through Turkey and Afghanistan and through Pakistan. And Pakistan, that's where I really copped it. I really got sick. And as soon as I got into the Indian border, I just went in the first hotel and just lay with diarrhea for a few days. But I didn't know too much about medicine. I was a theoretical physicist. But I thought I really needed salt. I wanted something salty. And so the first thing I did was just to stagger across the road to one of the little shops and just buy a whole bag of salt and munch most of it. And it was, I didn't realize that, you know, when you do have diarrhea, you lose a lot of your, not just water, your salts as well. And just my body was telling me, you need salt. Remember this other story which reinforced this about being sensitive enough to your body to know what it needs. There was a kid who had a craving for salt. You know, baby couldn't speak yet. And as soon as it would crawl looking for any container with salt in it. It would munch it. And then, as salt being bad for your health, so mummy thought, she would always have to put the salt in places where the baby couldn't reach. But still the baby would, amazing just how it would crawl here and crawl there to get the salt down. And so she started locking it up. And that's when the baby started getting more and more sick. And it died. And when the autopsy was performed, this baby had this very, very rare disease which could not metabolize salt and needed constant supply of salt. Like the baby knew. Like many people, you know that when you need water, you know when you need some salt or you need some honey or sugar or something. A lot, or when you need rest, when you need exercise. So because of that, to get insight, especially with meditation, I mentioned this to someone already. Sometimes, you know, after the talk or in the afternoon, you don't know what you should be doing. Ask your body, ask your mind. Body, what do you want to do right now? Remember I mentioned that when you ask a question of your body, you get an answer. Now, legs, how are you feeling? Actually, they're quite good. Back, how are you? You need to be back a bit. Do you want some water, some tea, body? A lot of times you don't ask the question, you just get so busy doing other things you don't notice. So you ask yourself, do you need a rest now? Do you need some exercise? Do you need a cup of tea? Do you need to meditate? And this works so well that you become sensitive, aware, open to not defilements, but to the wisdom of your body, what it needs. And it's also, you find that when you don't force your body or you force your mind, you find that when you ask your body what you want to do now, and it says, I want to meditate. You don't force it, because your body wants to have some rest and peaceful. It likes it. You don't force it. It wants to do it. And that happens so often with me. You know, you get up in the morning and say, okay, body, what do you want to do now? Yeah, let's meditate. Yeah, let's go for it. Yeah. So my mind and me become best friends. We cooperate. How we react is where I've got total choice, which means that I can react with kindness. I work with my body. And that started letting me understand that one of the biggest problems in meditation, the restless mind, and together with that is thinking. And I used to ask myself, well, why are you restless? Well, I was first taught, they said, if your mind wanders off when you're meditating, take it and bring it back again. But don't be sort of forceful. And don't be critical. Stupid mind, don't ever you do that again. Just bring it gently back. But you know what happened? It came back and it went off again. Bring it back again and it went over there. Bring it back and then it went over there. After about 5 or 6 years of that, I realized, hey, something's wrong here. Am I going to have to keep bringing this mind back every time for the whole of my life? And of course, you know, that was not using wisdom, power, insight. So just one day, I should have done this years ago, you know, when I first started, said, why is my mind wandering off? Why? So it wasn't a case of, you know, just it's the nature of the mind. And I realized it was wandering off to try and escape from me. I was control freak. My mind was scared of me. Have you got a good relationship with your mind? A really good one? If you have, your mind is very happy with you. Hi, it's you again. Yeah, let's hang out together. Let's chill out. This monastery is a very retreat center, a very good place for chilling out this time of year with these low temperatures. But, yeah, we can hang out together. And that's the attitude I have now. The story behind this, or which emphasizes this, this woman here in Perth, she had a kid, maybe 4, 5, 6 years of age, and just like any kid staying at home, the kid was upset one morning and threw a tantrum and told his mummy, Mummy, I don't love you anymore. I'm leaving home. 5-year-old. So what did the mummy do? This mummy, she's one of my heroes. She was so wise. You want to leave home? Yeah, I'm leaving home. Okay, darling. I'll help you pack. Any of you who've ever had a kid often wish you could do that. Get out of here. But it wasn't just trying to get rid of her, wasn't it? It was such a wise response. So, I'll help you pack. So she went into the little bedroom, packed a little suitcase, you know, with the important things in life. Spider-Man suit. Or whatever else. And then before you go, darling, and this is an important part, I'll make you your favorite sandwich. Because, you know, life is a long journey. You need something, you know, to go with you. So made a favorite sandwich, a nice little brown paper bag. And then the little kid, you can visualize it, the little kid just on the front door of the house, you know, with a little bag in one hand, a brown paper bag in the other hand with his lunch. And Mummy, bye-bye, darling. Have a wonderful life. Don't forget to visit, you know, every Christmas or whatever it is. Bye. And so the little kid left home for the first time in his life, only five. Just went to the end of the garden path, opened the gate, turned left and went down the street. Left home for the first time. And of course, what happened next? You know, it's obvious what happens next. Just about 20 meters down the road, was homesick. It was only five. Turned around, came back through the gate, up the path, and Mummy hadn't moved. Mummy knew what was going to happen. Welcome back, darling. Now, that was such a wise, emotionally intelligent mother, simply because if you try and hold the kid in, he'll get more and more upset. Okay, you want to go? Go with Mummy's blessing. But because Mummy was so kind and loving, of course the kid comes back. It doesn't go away too long. If you keep a bird in a cage, that could be your partner, that could be I don't know who. If you keep them in a cage, they'll escape at the first opportunity and won't come back. If you keep them in a, like a nice little house, or it could be a cage, but the door's always open, yeah, they may go out, but they always come back again, because their home is such a wonderful, happy place to be in. This is a simile for your mind. Is your mind a happy home? So happy that you're always glad to be here. Or is it you're trying to get away as soon as possible because you've had so much pain and difficulty and you don't really like yourself, you don't understand who you are, so you're a bit afraid. But with a bit of insight, you soon realize that your home is a wonderful place. You get to be at peace with yourself, kind to yourself, and you don't have to be perfect to have a good relationship with yourself. You let yourself be. So that's why I give many, many concrete meditation examples for how to like yourself so much that you're happy to be with you. So when you're meditating, oh, here I am again. Oh, great, what should we do? Yeah, let's go do jhanas together. Yeah, let's explore jhanas. Yeah. So, little examples. And what's really interesting is just people's reaction to this. Little exercise, so simple. Put your hands up. Hands wide out. Bring them in, just follow me. Follow me, follow me. Oh. Come on, get into it, come on. Oh, yeah. If no one else will hug you, at least one person in the world will hug you, and you really get into it, and I can feel the endorphins coming through my bloodstream. It's really nice. So what that really means is, you know, you're learning how to have a good relationship to yourself, not afraid of yourself, but an acceptance of yourself, a peace with yourself. And that's why, because I'm not the most perfect monk in the world, I tell these terrible jokes, but nevertheless, I'm at peace with myself, happy in my own skin, in my own robes. So what that really means is, whenever I meditate, I don't need to run away. I'm not escaping from anybody. I know who I am. That means that you can stay at peace. Don't need to go anywhere. Which is the end of restlessness. Why do people always think fantasies, dreams, plans which will never eventuate, memories which you can't change? Why do we torture ourselves with all these bad memories? I often say that if somebody hurts you, just like this sound. If somebody hurt you, every time you remember what they did to you, you are allowing them to hurt you again. Every time you remember what that did, they're hurting you one more time. You have a choice. You only let them hurt you once. And that's it. You refuse to let that memory cause you pain ever again. Once is enough. It's more than enough. Otherwise, you're letting them hurt you every time you remember it. To me, that makes no sense. You have the choice to do that. And then you're happy, at peace with yourself. You don't need to run away. You're just here, relaxing, just being here. And you ask your body, what do you want to do? And the body says, oh, I'm happy being here with you. Let's just go for a nice little walk. It's a nice sunny day today. Let's go for a nice walk around the grounds. Maybe go to the lake and have a sit down there. Maybe, I'm on the help and duties. But who knows, maybe, you know, you can just taste a bit of the food when the cook is not watching. Maybe you can have a bit of fun and just, you know, maybe put the food the wrong way round or whatever. I don't know what you're doing. But there's a lot of games and plays which we have, which is important to have that joy in your life, even in the cooking. So whatever you're doing, when I had my birthday a few years ago, they made these little cakes, little cupcakes. And on the cupcakes, they were really quite round, and they had little glasses on. They had a plum cake. It's much fun like that. You enjoy, you have happiness together. And I have happiness in my own mind. So that little joy, that happiness, means it engages your own mind. You know that I tell jokes. One of the reasons I tell jokes, because it makes people listen. Think. You engage with people. And that's the way that you meditate. You meditate engaging with your mind, not controlling it, not conquering it, engaging with it so you can be with your mind long enough to understand how it works. When you understand how your mind works and how your body works, it's easy to be at peace. In the same way that if you have a car and it's always, you know, it doesn't run properly, or it's always clunking and just making noise and smoke coming out, if you understand what the problem is, then you fix it up and it goes nice and smoothly. And you do that by investigating, finding out how you work. You work. Forget about other people for this time. How you work. And you find that you do have so many choices. Choices to forgive. It's your choice. You can if you want to. It's in your interest. The choice to let go. Why not? The choice, you know, to trust that now is where your future is being made, so you don't have to worry about the future. And the trust to be a friend to yourself. When no one else will, you can still have your own friendship and your own love and trust. And when you don't run away from yourself, the inside is right there. You're at peace. Not the best person in the world, certainly not the worst, and certainly unique. Just another tree in the forest. You belong. It's important to know that you belong. And number two, it doesn't matter just what type of tree you are. Without you, the forest will be much lesser. So understanding all of that, you're at peace with yourself. And meditation is just sitting here, just relaxing. And you think, well, what happens next? You'd be surprised. When you stop chasing the dreams, the reality is far better than you'd ever thought was possible. Peace, energy, bliss, happiness. That's what meditation does. It's a path of insight which leads to calm, and calm leads to insight. So there we are for this morning. Da da da. And now the sound is going to disturb everybody. Sadhu. 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 Very good. Okay, we've got some interviews now. In the meantime, enjoy the beautiful sunshine.